160 years ago, this year, Nottingham Forest Football Club, as it was known back then, was founded. 1865, I remember it well. I'm joking, of course, but they've been around ever since. They've been an amazing presence in the world of football. They've been up, they've been down, they've been in, never really down and out, but they've also achieved remarkable things. They're trailblazers, and by coincidence, it's like you planned it, that is the title of lifelong diehard Nottingham Forest fans book, Matthew Oldroyd. It's called Trailblazers, the groundbreaking history of Nottingham Forest Football Club. And I read a lot of books for the show, and I read all non-fiction, and I read quite a few football books and sporting books, and I would say 90% of them are average to mediocre. This one is that rare 1 in 10, maybe 1 in 20, that is a must-read, whether you're a Nottingham Forest fan or not. It's a brilliant read, this one. Exhaustive, but not exhausting. Published by Pitch. Great photographs as well. I'm delighted to say the now unofficial Nottingham Forest official historian, Matthew Oldroyd, author of Trailblazers, joins us now. Good morning, Matthew. A long introduction, but I'm genuinely enthused by your book, partly because it's also... It's a huge slice, which is what sports books should be, of our social history, our shared social history. Because when they... It's almost a toss of a coin when it seems to be when Nottingham Forest started off. You could have taken athletics forward. In fact, you stuck with football. Because you're a hugely important club, side, city in the history of athletics. I mean, the stadiums... at one point, you say, kids were climbing on the roof to watch an athletic meeting in the 1870s. The roof broke and people were injured. It was so kind of important, so popular.
Yeah, hi Paul, thanks for having me on. Thanks for the lovely introduction as well. Forest, I quickly found when sort of properly exploring this book, we're a club of sort of all sorts really. You've mentioned the athletics. We started as a shinty club, or as what we called locally shinny, which was a robust form of hockey. Yeah. And we had our hand in a lot of things, but predominantly it was the football side. Athletics quickly became a fairly important and significant part of the club through until about 1910, somewhere around there. But football was what we were burgeoning along with those other clubs, like Notts FC, of course, and Sheffield, and all those other clubs that sprang out in the 1850s and 60s. But Forest, I think, and clearly I've got some bias, I've been supporting them all my life, and I'm nearly 40 now, but Forest just had a bit of a shine to them, I think. And I think what they went out to do, sometimes not always intending to do it, but what they went out to do was change the game and develop the game, and that is kind of the story I wanted to tell, really. And all those brilliant stories, yeah, people on top of roofs watching athletics that Forest had organised, that they are those little details that I wanted to capture and really tell to, as you said, Forest fans, but also any football fan that's interested in the early days of football history and beyond.
Also around that time, Forest were taking part, there were a number of clubs there, in something called the Football Race. Tell us a bit about this. This has got some legs now. This would be something you could do at half time with, say, academy players.
Yeah, so it was. So we set up, and I will stress there are all the clubs that were doing the same thing at the same time, but we set up an athletics festival at Trent Bridge, which people know as the cricket ground of today. And I point out in the book, I'm not entirely sure of the background to it, but we started doing these little football events, and we started doing five-a-side games.
And you pioneer six-a-side, don't you, until it's banned by the FA?
Yeah, I think in itself, as I say, I think in itself that was a little bit of a new idea in the sport, which had only really started in an official capacity a few years before. So the Football Race was one that just sort of sprang out, and forgive me, I think it was the guy Revis that was one of the original founders of the club that set off on a race running with a ball, and we were up to all sorts of quirky stuff having those races at Trent Bridge in the first few years at the athletics football.
And we met some great characters along the way, including somebody, yeah, I think, called Piggy Walton, who we don't actually meet in person, it was a long time ago, but Piggy Walton's ground was part of the setup, I think, at Woolwich, near Woolwich in the old Woolwich Arsenal, wasn't it? So it was a game when, it's a period when the game in the early days could have disappeared, it could have been decidedly amateurish because there were lots of posh people playing and they were objected to taking money, or it could have morphed into this behemoth it is today. And I think it's impossible to avoid the conclusion from your book that Nottingham Forest have been that's one of the spines of football development. And it all happens again, of course, as we all know, I mentioned the great photos in this book, with the arrival of a certain Brian Clough, who's come from Derby via Leeds. And that's a hugely important part of all football's history, of our social history, I'd say, but certainly of Nottingham Forest's history.
Yeah, of course. I mean, one of the things I wanted to tell about the book was not necessarily make it that Brian Clough and Peter Taylor European Cup centric book, like obviously because the story's been told so many times and it's such a rich story. But clearly, when you're telling a as you quite rightly say, Paul, as you're telling the story about Forest history, but also football history and important milestones in the sport, clearly that spell under Brian Clough and Peter Taylor is always going to have to stand out. So I do dedicate some time to that story. And yeah, because of the social side of it and the cultural side and the heritage of Forest, Clough and Taylor are intrinsic to them and all those brilliant footballers that they had in that spell. So I bring that into it. But again, what I try and do is not tell the story of how Forest went and won the European Cup, but I want to tell those unique stories and those unique records behind those amazing feats. And that lasts, by the way, as well in the 59 Cup final and all our other achievements through the years.
Because you mentioned that I think you've won the FA Cup twice, haven't you? Which you say is a pretty poor return given your other achievements in some ways, but it is, after all, a knockout competition. But then you've had other remarkable milestones, like Viv Anderson, for example, great Forest player. When he ran out against, was it Czechoslovakia back in 78, he became the first ever black player to represent England at a senior level, and he was a Forest player.
Yeah, and I think Viv, again, was such a big part of that thing we've been talking about, that cultural side of the support. And nobody has ever done what, and I talk about it in the book, I think it's Viv's own words, nobody can ever do, again, what Viv did. And he was the archetype trailblazer of Nottingham Forest, in a way, in terms of he was a European, well, he wasn't a European Cup winner at the time, he was about to be, he was a league winner with Forest. And what he did, he took giant strides. And I know that clearly there was others. There was Regis and Cunningham at West Brom, I think it was. And there were others. But Viv became that poster boy. And he opened up that door to so many other opportunities. And again, he was very much always going to be part of the story I wanted to tell.
Now, we avoid cliches like the plague on this show. See what I did there. But for a long time, in football terms, and not infamously described as a slumbering giant. Your book has come along not only almost accidentally because of the anniversary, I believe, 160 years ago, the club was effectively founded. You joined, I think, the Football League in 1892. But also, you are, to say you're riding high is a complete understatement. I mean, you've got Champions League football in your sights, haven't you, for next season?
In our sights, yeah. I'd like to think we're not getting too carried away with ourselves, but also I think we're entitled to have a bit of a dream at the moment.
Absolutely.
We've had a bad spell. People older than me will obviously have had those great times during the 70s and 80s in particular, but for a generation of us, and I include myself in that, I just about remember the great days under Frank Clark in the mid-90s where we were in the UEFA Cup and finishing third. Mm. But those days have kind of come back round again, and it has come in a cycle. We've had some dark, dark days at Forest, much publicised, League One and missing out on the playoffs and all these horror stories. But what we've got now is ambition. We've got a fantastic, fantastic manager in Nuno and a squad of people like Gibbs White, Hudson-Odoi, Alanga. These are fantastic footballers. And actually, we're looking across that pitch thinking, crikey, where has this come from? We are tilting ourselves at Europe. I don't want to say we'll get it, but it's looking increasingly like we've got a really, really strong chance. And to come back to the book, I have a total fluke. I will admit I've been writing the book for 4 or 5 years, but to release it in this season when we are doing all of these things and there's almost a new sphere of trailblazing about to happen, hopefully, I couldn't have asked for it any better, really.
I do wonder, though, what you think of this, that there was... I mean, I'm older than you, much older than you. So I grew up... I remember watching Man United beat Benfica, become the first English side to win that top European trophy, for example. And there wasn't the focus on football there is now. It hadn't made it from the back to the front page of the papers. The papers weren't the same. There wasn't the coverage. And Europe was very much almost there as an afterthought for us. And I wonder whether your mighty European heritage... I mean, I think I'm right in saying you're only one of three clubs, is it Inter Milan and it must be Celtic, who won the European Cup at the first time you entered it. Now, that would be a huge story. At the time, that was just, oh, yeah, that's football. Yeah, fine, people moved on. You're a crucial European club. But it happened almost, I suppose, again, as trailblazers, you laid out a formula, a matrix that other clubs aspire to follow without almost getting the rewards for that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's a strange one in that we have this European heritage, but actually it's confined to such a small amount of years. We did a little bit in the FA Cup in the 60s and the aforementioned brief spell in the 90s under Frank Clark. Mm. But we have this sort of magic to that competition, really. I agree. I think we did set out a lot of how English clubs went into Europe. Clearly, Liverpool had done it as well. And we had that spell, didn't we, where Villa then came and triumphed a few years later.
They did it in 82, didn't they, Villa? But again, it was, you know, the second time that had happened.
Yeah, and Forest were, I mean, I total bias from my point of view, but that story is totally unique in itself. Because of how we rose up from finishing third in the old Division 2 in 1977, 3 years later, we defended the second European Cup. I mean, it's just phenomenal. And I think the prospect of Forest getting back, not just into Europe, but into that Premier competition, if we can do it, there's a fair old way to go yet. That would be, I think, a story that everyone, and I'd like to think not even just Forest fans, would actually cherish a little bit and thinking, crikey, those days of Brian Clough and Peter Taylor and what we did. Actually, we never saw this coming 3-4 years ago at all, not even 6 months ago. But that would be a hell of a story in itself, regardless of where we finished, where we came in the new format. It'd just be so exciting for all of us.
Now, you're obviously a lifelong fan, and if you're in your mid-40s, then you haven't got the hugest of memories of the initial glory days, I would say, in Europe of Nottingham Forest. What was it like for you and the family, because I think your dad as well, when you finally made it back to the Premier League in 2022, but then you looked at relegation, you were staring at relegation in the face almost immediately, and you brought in about 107 players, didn't you? Nobody knew the names of all the people you'd signed that first season back in the Premier League.
I mean, getting back there, my first season ticket proper was in 99 when we first came down on David Platt. And I'd been quite a lot in the 90s, but properly going when I turned of age, sort of in my early teens. So I'd seen a lot of dross and a lot of real heartache, real bad stuff, really. And I know it's all relative. People always say they've had it worse. But for Forest, it was a real bad time, 23 years. To get back and do it at Wembley, where we've got all this obviously famous heritage and all these landmark successes, it was brilliant. And up there among the very best of our modern days, I mean, probably right at the top. Then we look at it now and we kind of think, this is balmy. Yeah, you're right. I mean, we signed the infamous 30 players in that first season under Steve Cooper. But I think it gets forgotten a little bit. We had to do it. We lost seven or eight players.
All the lone players went back, didn't they? Yeah, that's what they
did. And we were fighting against it. Now, I'm not sitting here defending every single transfer here. We clearly went out and probably did more than we needed to do at times. And it didn't always work. But overall, I think you can look at Forest now and actually give the owner a little bit of credit and give the strategy a little bit of credit, because actually, yes, it might not have all been by design, but actually we're sat third in the Premier League in February. We're having the greatest season in 30 years since we last came third in the Premier League, and we're all just hanging on by the coattails and thinking, this is wonderful. Let's not worry too much about what anyone thinks about what we've done and what we haven't done. We're just having the season of our, as I say, of a generation, really.
It's a book full of great photographs. I'm looking at one now of Captain Jack Burkett, who paraded the FA Cup at Wembley in 1959, the last time he won it, I think. Also, I'd forgotten, well, I was going to mention it, I hadn't forgotten it, but you know, there's so much in this book, folks. You signed the first £1 million player in Trevor Francis. There's a great photograph of Cluffy about to go off and play squash with his squash racket in his hand. So, well, he better get some goals. You paid £1 million for him. And the book is a brilliant read. It's called Trailblazers by Matthew Oldroyd, published by Pitch, the groundbreaking history of Nottingham Forest Football Club. As I say, if you're any kind of sports book read or any read of non-fiction at all, get hold of this book, because it's a brilliant slice of social history as well. It's your first book, Matthew. It shouldn't be your last, mate, because you're onto something here. Have you got any plans, any thoughts even, about your next volume?
No plans. I don't think there'll be an obvious sequel to this one, because I might need to wait another 100 years. But who knows? Maybe there might be a nice one about a European Odyssey in 2025. We'll see.
Brilliant stuff from the man himself, the author of Trailblazers, our sports book of the week, here on Talk Sport and Talk, by Matthew Oldroyd, published by Pitch. And we, my friends, are live till 5.